member of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
As you turn the corner ahead, you see a narrow stone span over a pulsing stream of molten rock.
Dude, I totally got this. I move out to cross the bridge.
Halfway across, toxic fumes begin to make your head spin. You will have to make your save to continue on, or you will topple over into the lava. And through the shimmering heat, you think you see some short humanoids leveling crossbows at you from cover on the far bank. You are hit twice and feel a burning fire begin to spread from the wounds. Save or die!
Adventure 49. The Save or Die Podcast. That's right, you heard that right. Save or Die Podcast. I am, I believe, DM Vince, sitting alongside who believes to be DM Glenn.
The alleged DM Glenn.
The alleged DM Glenn.
Yes.
Also known as DM Glenn.
As DM Glenn, yes.
Yes. And sitting in as usual is Mike and Liz, one person.
We disbelieve.
We disbelieve. And popping his little ugly head out of the darkness, as usual, he's back again. Crispy.
Come on. This is Chewbacca. Chewbacca is a Wookiee.
He's a Wookiee.
He's a planet Kashyyyk. He lives on Endor. How would a Wookiee from Kashyyyk live on Endor?
Okay.
Okay. And Chewbacca is trying to imply that his returning doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
That does not make sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Chris.
What's up?
I think Mike and I are the only people who watch South Park here.
I'm glad at least somebody.
I watch yeah. South Park. I haven't been watching the season though.
It's like the alleged thing. I was like, Johnny Cochran, glove does not fit, must be quit.
Is it that saying I saw someone wrote on the board? It's like an old lady farting in church. It doesn't make any sense, but everybody just ignores it because you can't believe how outrageous it is. Anyway.
So how are we doing?
We're fine. We're going to head right into emails. Glenn.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, make me work. Thanks.
That's right.
Okay.
Hey, we waited for an hour.
They're not kicking you down the stairs anymore. Yeah.
Actually, people... Yeah. That was one of the weirdest things. People were like, oh, we like when you kick Glenn down the stairs. I'm like, okay.
You got the bruises on my butt to prove it, all right? Oh, okay.
Email,
yes. First one's from Darren. And he just has one thing to say. Where did you get the awesome image for episode 35? Very cool, Darren.
Well, Darren, for the image for episode number 35, actually, I've gotten it off eBay. That was someone's collection.
Whose?
I don't know. It was back in episode 35. I don't remember.
I just don't want the guy to come back and say, hey, you're using my image.
I don't care.
Okay, whatever. The next one comes from Brent Tomlevic. Hey, gang. Just wanted to drop you a line to tell you how much I enjoy the podcast. I play all editions of D&D, and I love to listen to all your advice about the game that I love. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Brent.
Thank you.
I start with the Beck Me box sets and never looked back since. I currently run events at my local store, Mayhem Comics in Des Moines, Iowa, for the first, second, fourth, and basic. I just love D&D in all its forms.
Is that a cheap plug or something? You just gave that?
Shout yeah. out for Mayhem Comics.
Mayhem Comics. But he runs first, second, and fourth. I found that odd. Hmm. The second reason
yeah, I was
I'm
just
right.
thinking that. But anyway.
Anyway, you well, remember
hey,
this.
Most
you
people who like fourth don't like third.
That's right. Or Pathfinder. Well, you remember Brent. Remember we did the email show and he used His guy at the game store said, hey, they defecated on your show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's that guy. Anyway, He goes on. The second reason I'm writing this is clear miscommunication. On the most recent podcast, you read an email from the host of The Bloody Bard. I am the store employee mentioned in this email. Oh, sorry. Well, he's close to it. Apparently, he misunderstood me as I was just telling him that you guys mentioned his podcast. I meant in a positive light to let him know that you guys were mentioning him. I did not mean to imply that your comments were negative. I just wanted to let him know that you were giving him some free advertising. Sorry for the confusion. Thanks for the hard work, Brent.
Okay.
I was waiting for a P.S. By the way, it's Mayhem Comics in Des Moines, Iowa.
Hey, you know, small
friendly local game stores need all the pimping they can get.
That's true.
And so I am happy to say, if anyone should find themselves in Des Moines, Iowa, go to Mayhem Comics.
Now!
And if you should find yourselves in Denton, Texas, go to Madness Comics on University Drive.
Schnell!
And whenever I get a chance and I'm around OKC, I go to Game HQ in Oklahoma City.
Or if you go to downtown Denton by the square, there's also a comic book store there right under the Fine Fart sign.
Crispy, your turn.
It's not under the Fine Fart sign. It is next to it.
Sorry.
www.ebay.com.
Smart man. Well, thank you, Brent. Okay, and the next one, we have two by Eduardo Alvarez, but they kind of flow into each other, so I'll just go through it. Hey, guys. Been slowly catching up on the show, and I finally arrived at Adventure 28, so I hope I'm not repeating what others might have already pointed out. Mm. All right, specifically to address Julie's description of the Minotaur myth. Unfortunately, she mashed together two for different stories, the Minotaur and the abduction of Europa. The Minotaur is the offspring of Palpatine of the Cretan bull, a white bull, brought forth by Poseidon for King Minos to sacrifice. However, Minos liked the bull so much, he instead sacrificed another mundane bull. This made Poseidon very angry, so he had Aphrodite make Pasiphae fall in love with the bull. The reason the Minotaur was locked up in the labyrinth, as per advice in the Oracle of Delphi, was because he was a very violent man-eater. The bit about the wooden cow made by Daedalus is correct, however. As for Zeus and Europa, Zeus changed into a white bull in order to abduct the Phoenician princess Europa, whom he had fallen in love, or whatever passes for love with Zeus, I guess. He carried across the sea to Crete, and then when he turned his back to his normal form, the constellation Taurus represents Zeus as his bull. I guess Julie might have mixed the tales because of the bull factor. And because one of the offspring of Zeus in Europa wasn't, in fact, King Minos. Anyway, I'm looking forward to your rest of your episodes. Keep up the good work, and I hope you don't mention the connection. Yours, Eduardo Alvarez. And the second one goes, oh yeah, I forgot to mention, Glenn, Zeus disguised himself as a swan to seduce Leda, the mother of the Helen of Troy, to seduce Alcami, mother of Hercules. He disguised himself as her husband, Amphitryon. Okay, now I'll shut up, Eduardo. I know I mispronounced about half the names there, but there you go.
That was like all Greek to me, so.
Exactly. It's all Greek to me. Yeah, I could say something about Greek, but I won't. Thank you, Eduardo.
Make sure we forward this to Julie so she can have a 9-minute response back.
That's right. We'll get another second from her. And
I can already tell that. I can already tell episode 49 is going to have all kinds of nicknames for it.
Yeah, like
Fun with Polymorph, episode 1.
And
the Great Game Store shout out episode.
Mayhem Comics, Iowa. Yeah, Des Moines, Iowa. That's episode? The email, and I'd like to also, on a personal note, I'd like to thank DM Brady, a.k.a. Deadlock, for there's a webzine out there called Mass Movement,
yes.
And in issue number 32, he gave us a nice little one-page review of all the Wild Games production shows, page 149. If anybody wants to check it out, it's massmovement.co.uk/WordPress. Yeah, it was very nice. He did a really nice job, and he mentioned everybody, even Crispy.
Yeah. Wow.
Even Crispy.
And Julie, too.
He has all his own shows. Fan club.
So, like, of course he would mention me.
Yeah, Crispy's the only one that's... Crispy's the only one that managed to weasel the trifecta out, so...
Yeah.
Yep.
I noticed that.
Just wait till RFI one of these days. I know.
And which issue was it? Mass Movement number what?
32.
Okay, that's the one.
They review punk and metal and film and books and all that kind of stuff and games. They have a nice article on the OSR movement there, and the last page is a nice little review of our shows. Cool. Shall we move on?
And if you'd like to write in to us, Glenn.
Oh, that would be saver.podcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to give us a voicemail, which Vince will lose somewhere, that is what?
I don't really think
570-290-7283.
There you go.
Thank Chris, you haven't lost your touch. Thank you.
And let's head into...
I'm going to go check that real quick.
While Chris is checking that...
Yep, I got it right.
Oh, sorry, it's a porn line. Oh, no.
Plan.
So, anyway.
Let's head into our first segment of the night.
Jim, work.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. But this isn't science. It's more like black magic.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together. Welcome to the Dungeon Master's Workshop.
GM Workshop. I don't know why you said GM Workshop.
I was thinking of General Motors.
Sorry. Yeah, I was like, General Motors?
You know.
So, the question of topic tonight, my friends, what would be your ideal classic Dungeons & Dragons campaign be like?
Be based on Candyland.
Okay, that's not one on the coin now. First of all, your ideal campaign. What rules would you prefer to use if you can sit down at the table?
Well, we have all these chutes all over the place and ladders to climb up to them. And no, sorry.
Okay.
And that's when I shot him, Your Honor.
It only took one bullet. Let's start with Crispy.
For me, it's a toss-up. I would. Right now, I'm prepping for a Swords and Wizardry game, but I still really like Labyrinth Ward.
Yeah.
So either one of those, really. Depends on... I don't know, like, it's such a hard thing for me, because I borrow...
Would it be
so
Labyrinth Lord or Labyrinth Lord Original Edition?
It would be Labyrinth Lord with the AEC.
Oh, advanced. Okay. Oh, so you play kind of 1E-ish.
Isn't AEC more based on 2E, I thought?
No, it's 1E.
Is it? Oh,
kind of. It's like... It's just spells and... rules for, like, potion miscibility and some of the advanced classes.
Oh, okay. I thought it had a little bit of...
Which are in Swords and Wizardry complete anyways. Like,
true.
A lot of that stuff's in there. So, I really, really like Swords and Wizardry a little bit better just because it's better organized on the DM side. Like, the treasure hoard rules I prefer more than the treasure table rules.
Of course it's organized. Well, Matt Finch is a lawyer, so...
Yeah.
he gets everything right.
I would play Labyrinth Lord just because it has a little bit more rules. It's less ambiguously written as well. So, like, I'm torn between the two. I can't decide which one I like better.
Torn between the two lovers.
Crispy, can I ask you a question about Labyrinth Lord?
Yeah.
This is... Try and follow me on this one. Now, Labyrinth Lore is pretty much based on BX.
Yes.
D&D.
Yeah.
Do you have a copy of BX?
I do. I have a digital copy of BX.
Okay. Now, seeing as you like Labyrinth Lore so much, do you like that better than BX? Or, I mean, you've always been Mr. Labyrinth Lore.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I do like a little bit better than BX. I just like the retro clones because of organization. Like, they kind of use more of the, like, 3.5 organization. Like, here are your races, and then here are your classes.
Oh, step
this is
step.
Race and class, and then equipment, and then spells, and then DMing stuff.
Okay.
And it's all one book. Which I know you can do that with BX, but...
Yes. I know, but I just wanted to know because, I mean, you've been so... You've been Mr. Labyrinth Lord so long, it's really made me anxious to find a copy and, you know, actually have a copy of my own and stuff. So you sold me on it.
It's free. Just
I know, but
means
I want
a hard copy.
I want a hard copy of it. You know,
you
so
get
like
them off Lulu.
Yeah, I'm hoping in North Texas somebody will bring copies to sell or something because I'm lazy. But. That's all. I was just wondering about that. That's all.
I made myself a nice little travel size of the Labyrinth Lord.
What, a travel size of that?
Yeah.
Just like your BX?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Can you read that one?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You said the BX is, yeah, it's nice, but it's really hard to read.
Yeah. I made it a little bit bigger. It's a bigger travel size.
Oh, okay. Okay. I love digest size stuff. I really do. If I could get their RC in digest size, I would be so happy.
Wouldn't that be like a giant brick?
Yeah.
It would look like a brick.
Well, it comes in handy if the players get unruly, you know.
Speaking about bricks, Glenn, when I was at the store the other day, I saw your 5th edition Heroes Black Book.
Oh, yeah, Volume 1 and 2, you can kill people with those things.
Otherwise known as the Dallas phone book, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that book and I went, oh my god, Glenn was not kidding about this book. This book is huger than, like, the world. Mm.
And that was just Volume 1, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they split into two. I look at 4th edition and Champions, I'm going, why? Why? You don't need that much. Anyway, we're talking about something else.
Yeah.
Let's go on with this. What about you, Vince? What would be your ideal?
I would probably use BX, or as I've been reading Labyrinth Lore recently, it's the same thing.
Uh-huh.
I kind of like the AEC jump add-on to it, because it makes it a little bit more like 1st edition, but then I was reading some things I didn't like, so I thought it was more 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
But as you guys pointed out, it's really just 1st. I know, folks, if you don't like use it, don't use it. I won't use it, you're right.
Folks, don't tell them about the AC. All they did was take Thaco out, and it's 2nd edition.
Shh. There's no Thaco in 1st edition.
Sorry.
Another reason that I really like Swords and Wizardry is because they have the rules for ascending armor class. And I'm just like, you know, I'm going to be playing this with people who have only played 4th edition and, like, 3.5. I think I'll throw them a bone.
Doesn't Labyrinth Lord have rules for ascending armor class, too?
Yeah. Like, it's got ascending and descending, and it uses descending as the default, so low armor class is better.
Yeah.
It's super easy. You can do it in any game to switch it.
Most games with ascending armor class, I don't even like know. Like that guy on the board, FJW, he comes out with his house rules. At first, I was going to write, he says, "You lost me at ascending armor class." I just, that's old school to me, and frankly, I don't want to convert. So,
ascending armor class is just for people who don't feel like you do using math. That's all.
It's for people who don't want to look on a chart. Like, it's the same thing, guys. Like,
yeah, it's...
Well, I use these...
Well,
I
don't it's need like you have a chart of numbers versus, like, here's the number I hit.
Right, but you could do that with descending, too.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's the same thing.
Okay. It's Thaco. Ooh. Anyway.
Glenn, I would disconnect you faster than you can blink.
I bet I could do it faster.
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
Yeah, okay. So so yours would be BX.
Oh, definitely.
Your own campaign, your own world?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What kind of changes would you make?
Well, let's go around to the rest of the people first, Glenn.
Okay, sorry. I didn't
Mikey.
Okay.
Mike?
Ideally, it would probably be OD&D with supplements.
Okay. So you're going to say mazes.
For me personally, although with players, I'd probably be willing to go to basic expert. But that would be as far as I went. Ideally, I'd like to use OD&D with all the supplements and the Greyhawk combat system.
Okay. And I know Liz was going to say, back me, of course, right? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, of course! No. I'm sure this is coming as no surprise to anyone who's listening so far, but, you know, yeah, I would be running Holmes Basic, and I would be using Brown Book supplements for going higher than 3rd level.
Are you not going to use Mazes and Perils?
I was going to say, you know, Crispy talking about using Labyrinth Lord because it was, you know, in a better format and easier to find things. You know, yeah, I would probably use either your Mazes and Perils or Thorkammer's Holmes 77, you know, because it's still the same, you know, pretty much over all the same rules, but it's easier to find stuff than in the original Holmes booklet. And I love the Holmes rules to death, but it is hard to find stuff because it's all over the place in that book. You're
and
constantly
yet,
flipping back and forth.
And yet, it is easier to find stuff in it than in Brown Book. I love Brown Book, but wow.
I'm looking through my copy of BX since Glenn brought it up, and I realized, like, the one thing that really just ruins BX for me. Not ruins, but why I like Labyrinth Lord over BX is coin weight.
Oh, yes.
Why can't we just use regular pounds?
Well, it's just simple math.
Yeah, but, like, regular weight, even simpler math.
Yes. So,
well, back then, they used everything in coin weight.
That was the most common thing you used your strength for, is to carry, or endurance, is to carry coins.
But also, they were trying to capture that whole realism from, you know, medieval times. Back then, they just, everything was based off coin weight, so.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Everything was based off of how much coins weighed.
Okay, I thought that was just a brain fart by Gary or something.
No, if 1,000 coins weighed this for a chair, that's things like that. That's how they did the weight for things.
And if it weighs same as a duck, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it's a witch.
Then it's a witch.
And then you burn her.
Gotcha. Okay, what about? Oh, we already did Liz, didn't we? Yeah. Okay.
Whoa. Just now. Yeah.
She liked it.
More or less.
She liked it.
Yes.
Oi!
Oh, boy.
What changes from the by-the-book method would you do?
Nobody asked me.
We don't care about you.
Nobody cares, Glenn. No.
Go ahead.
No, Glenn, what would you do?
Well, you know, I'd probably go Beckme for the game system. And let me say that, since I don't have a lot of history in playing Basic, I'm just going by the recent history with my grandsons, because we're already doing it. We're doing pretty much Beckme by the book, and I've stuck them in a world, and we're just using that and, you know, Basic Metzer stuff. That's me.
Using Basic Metzer, so you're not actually using all the rules from the RC?
Oh, no. No. I mean, we're not doing weapon specialization or anything like that. You know, it's like, you know, eight years old, they don't care. I'm a fighter. I'm a cleric. Let's go.
The crap that we don't like, and according to Frank Mentzer, neither does he. So.
Yeah. I mean, God help me if they ever wanted to do, if they had a really burning desire to do War Machine, I'd like probably faint.
Did you ever try doing Dark Dungeons with them, or no?
No, because I don't have a copy. I mean, I got
Black
a PDF
Leaf,
copy.
No.
I got a PDF copy, and I hope to... Oh, by the way, Darker Dungeons is out, and Darkest Dungeons is coming out. You'll never believe what kind of mashup they're doing for that. Oh, it's going to be
Darkest Dungeons.
Yeah, they got Dark Dungeons, Darker Dungeons, and Darkest Dungeons.
Yeah, they really pulled the originality name out of the hat there.
Absolutely, so. Darkest Dungeons.
Yeah,
Dark Dungeons is RC straight up. Darker Dungeons is RC with some house rules mixed in. Get this: Darkest Dungeons is the RC with some D20 stuff and Rollmaster of all things.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. Huh?
Wow.
I even asked Blackie, I said, oh, for a minute I thought it was going to be that and Arduin, and he says, not even I'm that crazy.
Hey, I know. Next time we should do Chartmaster.
Yeah, there we go. That'll be our next EP podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's straight up Beckme, you know, without any of the add-ons.
Mm. Okay, so
okay.
What by the book
okay,
rules?
Grumpy. Go ahead.
What by the book rules would you change? I don't know. I don't really go by the book, so. And classic
as far
is really.
As rules...
Go ahead, Liz.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't sure if you were.
I was kind of just
talking to anyone in particular.
I was kind of generally over just stating. A lot of people don't do by the book rules because it's classic. But go ahead.
With mine, anyway, rather than having everything be D6 damage, which is strictly by the book Holmes, I would give the, you know, different weapons different weapon damage. That's normally
yes.
What I like to do.
Now, Liz, don't they have an option in there of different weapon damage?
It is an option, yes. That's the default. Okay. And, you know, Holmes basically says... You know, for new players, it's suggested that you start off using everything being D6, you know, just to get them, you know, into the game and, you know, comfortable. And then if you wish, you can go on to different weapon damage. But
okay.
I like the different weapon damage, so.
Okay.
See, I'm the opposite. I really like D6 weapon damage. but no one will ever let me use it.
Thorky would.
Yeah, he would.
Like, oh, why does my longsword do the same damage as a D6?
And I'm like, oh, I don't know, like, probably for the same reason that you're a friggin' wizard. Shut up and play.
Why does the top hat move at the same rate of speed as a little terrier dog in Monopoly? It just does. You know,
top hats don't work. You know the race car could outdistance that dog in top hat. But
that's my house rules for Monopoly. Take movement speeds and...
Yeah, but my shoe has haste on it, so...
That quote was from Gnarly Bones, by the way, in Dragon's Foot. I love that.
Okay. Anyway.
How come my user can't wear armor? Because that's the rules of the game. But it doesn't make sense! Yeah, anyway.
Okay, Mike, and what by-the-book rules would you change?
Well, character generation, I'm more of a put them where you want them rather than rolling in order. If I'm feeling particularly generous, I'll do a 46, pick highest 3. I really like the magic missile melee movement melee system out of Basic Expert, so even in original D&D, I would import that.
Magic missile movement melee?
Yeah. System?
Yeah, magic first, missile combat.
Oh, okay.
Phase, and then
and melee.
Yeah, that's what I like to use as well.
Yeah, I think it's very elegant and easy to remember.
And that way your spells, like, I think we talked about this on RFI last time I was on.
Uh-huh.
That way your spells don't get wasted because they actually go off first. And you don't have to worry about, oh, this guy moved or my fighter buddy killed him before my spell could go off.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually. Mm-hmm. I like that.
And I know this is heresy, but I like D10 initiative.
All right, you're being disconnected.
No!
You are being disconnected.
I have no husband.
I don't know. When I play with the kids, you know, I let them roll a D4, I roll a D12, and, you know, we just take different dice and you do it.
Oh, boy. Crispy, what about you?
But most everything else I would leave intact.
Well, for my Swords and Wizardry game, like, I'm bringing race as class back in. Swords and Wizardry Complete doesn't have race as class.
Yeah, that's something else I would do, but I'll go ahead, Crispy.
Yeah. I really like race as class. I think it's
cool.
It's cool, and it's very old school to me, and that's, like, I like to keep that.
And on that subject, I actually created up various multi-classes and made them as new classes using the whole basis class paradigm that I use in my basic game too. So it's like if you wanted to play a magic user thief, you play a charlatan. And it's already set up and added all together and everything as far as hit die and all that. So that's another thing I would change. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and then for punching and wrestling or overbearing, like I would use the rules for overbearing because I think they're really like simple and really good, but for like if you want to punch a guy to death and knock him out, I would actually just use non-lethal damage from 3.5. Like it's just instead of doing half real damage, half subdual damage, you just do all subdual damage, and you have to keep fighting until you bring down their.
I just use it like easier. Regular combat. Except you're doing subdual damage.
Yeah, like...
Because, overbearing and pummeling and grappling and...
Like, grappling is a little... It's wonky, so I would just stick with, like...
The D20
everybody
system.
rolls their hit dice in D6s, and if the overbearers or grapplers win, they grapple that person. Or if the grapplee wins, they break free. I that's really simple... And it works, and I like it a lot. I think it's kind of cinematic. It gives me a Herculean kind of imagery to my head.
Herculean!
Where it's like all these guys are just jumping on one dude, and he's like, and he,
as opposed to a Herculoidian view. yes, And Liz and Glenn are the only ones that laugh, because they're probably the only ones that caught that reference.
I groan, actually.
Either way, you caught that reference.
All right. You got me there.
And Vince and Crispy are going, what the hell is he doing?
No, I went,
No, I know the Hercule. Oh. It's.
Oh, okay.
Then the other two things are just, I would use the AEC rules for multi-classing.
Oh, yeah,
and,
one of those.
They're just a little bit different from Swords and Wizardry. I don't really like how Swords and Wizardry handles multiclassing that well. And then the racial limits.
Okay.
Like, I would let, like, half-elves be rangers in Swords and Wizardry. Just because, like, that makes sense to me.
Well, that's a half-elf. Okay, you're adding half-elves to the racist class then, too.
No, half-elves are, like I said, Swords and Wizardry doesn't do racist class. Like, I would let you be, like, in Labrador making AEC, you can be an elf, or you could be an elf fighter magic user, or an elf fighter magic user thief.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Glenn, but I think what he was pointing out is half-elf generally isn't a classic race.
Okay.
As far as
gotcha,
PC.
Gotcha.
But it's in both the AEC and in Swords and Wizardry Complete.
Okay.
So,
well, I would expect it to be an AEC since it's basically trying to emulate 1E. I'm rather surprised it's in Swords and Wizardry, though.
Yeah, Swords. Well, it's the complete book is basically it's like OD&D with supplements and then a few extra things thrown in.
1E light.
1E, yeah, light.
Okay.
Cool.
So yeah. I think with the grappling system, I would just use D20 versus D20 and then make modifiers as needed.
Hmm. Is that what you would change, Vince?
Yeah, I'd probably change that.
What else?
Not really a lot changed. There's not a lot to change in BX, so...
Okay.
I take it as it is, pretty much. If it's something
needs,
I'm pretty much, if something needs to be called, I'll just make a rule for it. I don't care what the book says.
Yeah, which is that's why
classic.
I like old school games. Like,
yeah,
that's exactly the reason why I enjoy them.
Oh wait, that's because I don't know the rules, so I just make them up. As some moronic.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah, as some moronic person who decided to give a 1-star review to our podcast said.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone
gave Saber Guy.
No, it was for RFI.
Oh, well, it's not our podcast, then.
No. I'm sure he'll get around to deleting his 5-star review to put a 1-star review.
We're Wild Games. He disses one, he disses all of us.
Ah.
Anyway.
Bring back Jason. No, I'm kidding. Would you use a
Liz!
Yes?
What would you change?
I've already said what I've changed.
We're already through everybody.
Yeah.
We are. We are.
You simply weren't paying attention.
No, it was changing the D6 damage.
Yeah.
I remember.
Okay.
Once again, I go, what about me?
You already said yours.
Yeah.
Weren't you first?
I didn't say what I changed.
Go ahead.
No, he didn't. He didn't, actually.
I asked what he changed. He says, no, let everybody go. Okay, fine.
See, the thing is, Glenn, you talk so much in everybody else's. We all just assume you've already...
Yeah, we already know what you're going to say. You've said it.
Okay, what am I going to say, Crispy? That's what I thought. Well, I would change very little. As far as Beckme goes, like I said, we wouldn't use the skills. We wouldn't use a lot of stuff. But and also, probably the races, I'd probably let go up like humans.
Would you use all of Beckme or Beck or... Beckham, just
I bend it like Beckham, and
whoa.
So, anyway, pretty much mostly it would be like races can go up, and I want to add the gnome as a racist class.
Man, like that's the beauty of old school games. There's no gnome. Like who plays the gnome? Seriously,
I like gnomes.
Chris, next game we're playing, you're playing a gnome.
No.
I also find it
odd. Glenn, just tell me, what's the difference between a gnome and a dwarf, really? Other than a goofy sense of humor.
That goes a long way in my book, buddy.
Tune. That's all I'm saying.
Glenn, what's the difference between a gnome and a halfling?
A beard and a big nose.
I don't know, man. I've seen the ranking.
Yeah,
that
of course vindicates an entire sub-race right there.
Well, also the fact that they're more mechanically inclined.
Well, if you take the Tinker Gnome path idea.
Yeah, or Top Ballista.
See, I think of David the Gnome when I think of gnomes.
David the Gnome.
Yeah.
Gnome.
Gnome. But anyway, I wrote him up as basically magic user thieves. And that seemed to
fit. I could see an argument for that.
Yeah.
Even though I hate gnomes.
Yeah. Also,
I hate gnomes too, Mike.
Also,
we're best friends now.
Also, I wanted to try out an all
BFF place. Man.
Children.
Go and have a love fest, guys. Come on. I also wanted to try out an alternate saving throw that I found on the web on a blog that was very interesting. Basically, they gave each attribute what you save versus, like intelligence save versus magic and illusion, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, and, making it attribute-based.
Yeah, and what you do is you either roll a d20 or 3d6, whatever you're agreeing on, subtract your level. If your dice roll modified by the subtraction is less than your attribute, you pass the saving throw.
Oh. Kind of like Castles and Crusades does, except you're going for high rather than low.
Yeah.
In CNC, you have a target number, and you're trying to roll with the attribute modifier, depending on which attribute you're saving against.
Right, and the higher level you get, you know, it makes, no.
Right, you add your level, too. Yeah.
You subtract your level.
Blah, 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 blah.
Add your level, right, because they go ascending. Yeah, okay.
They go up, whereas the system goes down.
Anyway, that's what I do. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm done. I'm over with.
Yeah, publish campaign, roll your own. Obviously, I usually use my own. As we know.
My own.
Yeah. My own.
I got the kids stomping around Thunder Rift right now.
How's that going?
It's going okay. I'm getting ready to start back up again. They're having fun. I'm running them through some module or something, but I ran Gage through a solo one night because he wanted to play and there was nobody else around, so I had him stop some zombies in the graveyard in Puddleton, and now every time we get together, we kind of go back to that graveyard. Yeah, that's where they're based out. Puddleton, yeah.
That's great.
And so we gotta go back to that graveyard. Yet he's afraid of vampires. But he wants to go play with the undead. Go figure.
That reminds me of somebody said about D&D characters. You know, it's like, there's a vampire. Oh, we're not high enough level for that. A lich. Ooh, that's scary. A dragon. Let's get him!
Yes!
What? But anyway.
Oh my god.
Anyway. We're having a ball, and
reminds me of that commercial I saw today, the new Audi commercial for the headlights that they have. They're so bright, they're like daylight inside of a headlight. And it's supposed to be a vampire rage party going on. The car pulls up with a guy with beer, and they're like, "He's here!" And he flicks the light on, and all the vampires go boof boof because of the lights.
Then Wesley Snipes gets out of the car.
No, not Wesley Snipes, but
Blade.
Not since that Ray-Ban commercial, a vampire commercial.
All the vampires explode as this guy goes, "What's going on? Where'd everybody go?" Audi headlights, bright as day.
Ta-da. Can blind people driving towards
traffic.
You.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, so let's head on to our next segment. We burned this enough.
Okay.
Well, we didn't get Liz's homebrewer or published event campaign.
Who cares?
Well, don't they run in Kobold World?
No, they do not.
Had this nation run by kobolds over here.
So which would you use, Liz?
Oh, gosh. I've either used my own, and by saying my own, it's basically something that's based off of the brief description that you have of the opening of the sample dungeon in the Holmes book, talking about the city of Port Town and the Green Dragon Inn. And when I ran my cousins through games, we would always start at the Green Dragon Inn in Port Town. and go out from there. So, yeah, either that or games that I've run, you know, since then, I tend to use Mike's Homebrew World. So,
because it's that awesome.
And it's already done.
Victoria.
Less work for me. If I was going to use a published campaign world, I would probably use Greyhawk. That would be my pick for using a published world. I'd do in the world of Greyhawk.
Greyhawk. Yep. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So there.
What's wrong with Greyhawk?
Nothing.
No, I'm talking to Glenn.
What? Nothing. It's just that's one more world I have to memorize, and I don't want to. If I used it, but that's neither here nor there. That's all.
Anyway.
So, game on, we have now.
On and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. This segment's really going to talk about different style. The ideal number of players in your game would be what?
4 to 5.
Yeah, 4 to 5.
That's me.
Chris? Mike?
Is that 4 to 5 count the DM?
Yeah,
players.
Just players?
Yeah.
Yeah, 4. I have 5 if I on the real outside, but that starts getting out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. 3 to 4 is really my ideal.
That's what I was going to say, 3 to 4. I like small groups.
Well, I usually do 4, 5. That's good. 3 is okay. 2 is getting like a boring, but...
I've run some pretty good 3-person campaigns, and also I'm playing in some good 2-person campaigns. But you have to, like, you really have to make, you have to go a little more lenient, because there's only 2 of them.
No.
Well, like, do they get hirelings?
we have a couple hirelings, we have a couple henchmen.
Okay, so it's not like just 2 characters.
Yeah. The reason I like 4 to 5 is because it fills all the roles, the fantasy trope, you know, fighter expert,
the archetypes, arcane,
and yeah, and then divine, the healer, and then you get a little bit of room for overlap, so you can have 2 fighters, or you can have like a fighter magic user or an elf.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that, and you know, I think with older games, hiring henchmen is always a good idea. Like, the game we're gearing up to play, we have, like, a fighter magic user, a cleric, a wizard, a ranger. So they've got 1 or 2 people who can kind of fight. So I'm just like, you guys really need to probably hire some people.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how that's going to turn out.
That's interesting. I've never been one to get hirelings or henchmen.
No?
No.
I'm late. Me too. Most of the people I played with, other than when I first started, especially in high school and stuff, most of the parties that I either ran or played with didn't want to hire hirelings. It was really weird.
Yeah, and it's kind of a thing that's been dropped from the game now, in the current edition.
Yeah.
But I do make it... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, 3.5, you get followers if you take a feat, but you need to be 6th level to take that feat.
Leadership, right?
Leadership, yeah. You get a cohort. And your cohort is basically like they're really like a retainer, like they're an adventurer who goes out and adventures with you, and then you can have your followers who can be They're a mix of hirelings and, like, special mercenaries.
Kind of like when you reach name level in 1E or something, you rolled for your followers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially
very much
like or something. Oh, okay.
But you can still take them to adventure with you.
Now, I distinguish between hirelings and henchmen and the DM running a couple more characters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
basically,
and I've done it.
Members of the party.
Because I've done that before. I mean, we're playing a Quest for the Silver Sword, and that recommends four, but we only had two players. So I ran another cleric and a thief along with running the game. And I see no problem in that.
Yeah. I've done that in a one-shot for B2 that we did. I got everyone together and just had them play. And I thought it was really fun. Like, that I got to be these extra people, these extra characters. And it's really nice with classic D&D because combat is not super involved or hard. It runs really fast and loose.
Yes, it does.
So you can kind of... You can take on that extra responsibility. With Pathfinder and 3.5, I will roleplay the cohorts, but I will not do the combat stuff. I leave that up to the player.
Good idea. Yeah, it's hard enough as it is in 3.5.
Yeah.
I remember we played original Classic. We were running around with seven players, and every person had about 10 retainers with them.
You run around with an army.
You run around with an army.
Yeah, that's old school there.
Yeah. Because it was so hard to get into a group half the time.
Okay, have the hireling NPC thief pick the lock. Oh, he got poisoned. All right, have the next one.
No, that was...
Just keep going up.
That's one thing the DM would not allow.
That's not going to work.
No, the DM would not allow that. The players do those actions. You would roll for your hirelings or henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was something stupid, the DM wouldn't let you do that. Like, I send him into battle on purpose, or no, you don't. He wouldn't do that.
Would they fight alongside you though?
Yeah, of course. Unless you did something stupid, then they would backstab you, take your gold, and run away.
Yeah. Say you're
and
fighting.
If you did have the thief pick that lock, and he succeeded, he would want a portion of whatever was in there.
Yeah, and that's how I run it. That's the Labyrinth Lord way. Is They gain a half share of experience, and they gain treasure. They're just like regular characters. So right.
Yeah. If you find treasure and you don't share it with... If you don't share it with them by the end of the day, is what the rule was, as far as when you go camping and not camping and end of the session, the DM had a little chart that he wrote on about how the hirelings felt about the party.
Yeah, and that's in there, too. They get, like... If you treat your hirelings like crap, they'll leave. It's kind of how Labyrinth Lord says to run it. Just like,
yeah.
We had one of the hirelings come up as a representative for the rest of the hirelings. We don't think you're treating us very fairly. Like he was
or a union.
The shop steward. Yeah.
Yeah, the shop steward or something. Yeah.
Management and labor. Oh boy. So if you had a bunch of like fighters as your hirelings and you were fighting an ogre, say, Vince, if you were engaged, would the rest of them be standing in line behind you waiting for their turn, like in the Bruce Lee movies, or what?
No, they go fight.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, okay. So what classes, going along with the number of ideal players.
Ideal players.
The classes you'd allow to play, would you change them at all, and also... To add upon this, what if the players all decide to be fighters or all be thieves? Would you allow them, no, only one fighter, one thief, one cleric? And let's say they pick races and then no one picks a healer. Do you substitute a healer in for it? Or you say, oh, well, too bad, it's your fault, your life's...
Now you see, that's exactly where hirelings come in,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. If they all want to play fighters, fine. But if you're going to want a healer, you better hire one.
I give them a discount on I give them a bulk discount on healing potions at that point.
Really? I mean, yeah. Classic healing is so cheap as it is.
No, but I'm saying, you know, if they buy a gross, they knock it down a couple gold per.
But one thing I couldn't Walmart. Understand was
yeah, pretty much.
I couldn't
Magical
understand
Walmart
when I was running the Legend of Fing Fang Foom.
Yeah.
Glenn, you guys, I didn't understand when I gave you plenty of chances to go back to town to buy stuff. You guys never bought healing potions.
You're right. We never did. It never occurred to me.
And I kept saying to you guys, you didn't want to go to any stores, any magical store. No, let's just go back to the temple. I'm like, okay.
Well, I tried my damnedest to get myself killed, and I just can't seem to do it.
You did die twice.
Yeah, but I came back twice.
Anyway, classes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Mike, I would say, if they all want to be fighter or all magic users, let them do it. I mean, I'm not going to say no, and that's for races. Like, I have my own thing with races, but if there's 4 to 5 people, if you have 2 elves, it's not a huge deal. Or if it's all elves, like, I think that's pretty interesting, because it's like, why are all these elves going out and adventuring together? What forced them from their homeland?
Well, they do have scenarios written for all one race or class, too.
Yeah.
I was just bringing that up because also another group I was in, there was one person that no matter what, when he rolled up a character, he didn't care. He played what he wanted to play and didn't care about consulting with the group. Mm-hmm. So if
my guys are all pretty good about, like, fulfilling roles. And, like, my roommate usually waits till everyone else makes their character before he decides on what he wants to be.
Oh,
and
yeah.
My friend Joe is like that, too. He's like, oh, well, I'm going to see what everyone else wants to be, and I'll fill the role that no one else wants to do. And
I think Liz is kind of that way, too. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, which is generally why I tend to end up being either a cleric or a mage. Mm-hmm. Cleric more often than a mage, because for some reason that seems to be the class most likely for people not to want to take.
Yeah.
I really don't see a problem with the clerical class. You know, you've got fighter skills, plus you have the ability to, you know, do divine spell casting as well. You know, it seems like it would be a pretty cool class to be. And yet for, you know, so many players that I've met over the years, they all seem to really dislike playing clerics more than anything else.
Maybe
I've never played a cleric myself, but I've seen an 8th level cleric in action, and they're pretty good.
Yep. Maybe it's the whole thing about tithing to your temple or something. I don't know.
You can't use edged weapons. Big deal.
Yeah.
You can use a blunt weapon.
Yeah,
big deal. It's the same thing.
A lot of
it all does a d6 anyways.
And I've been in a lot of games where people house rule. You know, if you're a cleric, depending on what god you worship, if their, you know, weapon that they're known for is a bladed weapon, you can use that weapon and nothing else in the bladed category. So, you know, a lot of DMs even, you know, get around that, and yet people don't like clerics that much.
A
hammer can do some pretty good damage, you know, especially if you're fighting larger than man-sized creature. You can get into some D12s and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I like to give people that play clerics an additional spell per day or extra healing potions or something just to say thank you for playing the class.
Yeah, I usually, if they don't have a lot of healing, I'll give them some healing potions. But that's a finite resource that they can run through.
True.
And then I always give the cleric extra healing spells for high wisdom. I toyed around with doing that for magic users and high intelligence. But I don't think they need it. Like, I don't know. I'm still toying with that. That's another house rule that I forgot to mention.
Ah, okay.
Okay, understood.
What about you, Glenn? You've been so quiet.
Oh, me? I'm just Mr. Shine retiring back here. I allow all the standard...
Creepy old guy in the back.
All standard basic classes and races, and add gnomes, and...
Gnomes.
But if so,
Astral Nonsense.
Hush.
You'll never roam alone.
Okay, cool.
That's as far as it goes. Just the usual. The standard races. If you want to play something like a polymorph kangaroo, I tell them to go find the 1E game down the street or something.
Hey.
Go find Vince's game.
I would let people do that, because that is very Holmes basic.
What, a polymorph kangaroo?
Oh, yeah.
Are you playing Gamma World?
You know, playing basically any playing any race. You know, they've got the, you know, for instance, Port Town, the apocryphal city that you start out from in the sample dungeon. You know, it's, you know, they describe it as being a place where humans and, you know, all different types of races gather. It's a big melting pot of a city. And in the Rogues Gallery, and granted this is not technically basic, but you could certainly use it, especially with the Holmes rules. You know, some of the characters that, you know, Gary, Ernie, Luke, you know, people who were, you know, brought back as lizard men or centaurs or whatever.
Uh-huh. Or in that Holmes novel, Maze of Peril. I mean, yeah, describing the inside of the... Yeah.
So yeah, I would allow any race, because that gives, to me, that brings back the feeling of the Holmes rule book to me, is just, you know, letting people do all kinds of stuff. Now, that being said, I would have to say no if it was pretty obvious that someone was trying to choose a monster type race just so that they could do all kinds of cool stuff, you know, trying to break the system, as it were. But various humanoid type races, like say a lizard man or a centaur, you know, or, you know, a half orc or, you know, whatever, you know, I think that's pretty cool. And if they can role play it well, it could be a really nifty game. And that's another reason why I like small groups, because it's easier to rein in your players if you've only got three or four people to keep track of than when you're trying to herd a room full of cats and you've got seven or eight players instead.
Well. Oh, sorry.
Add them to the game.
Would you let someone play like a Puss in Boots character from the Shrek?
I could be persuaded.
Yeah, big orange cat in boots.
True. Don't you play? Doesn't Mike already play a humanoid version of that with the guy with the mustache?
Oi.
So,
Orlando's mustache is offended by such comments.
On the note of different races and racist class and letting them play weird things, there's a document. I don't remember where I got it, but I use it pretty often when I'm homebrewing new classes, called The Perfect Class.
Oh, yeah! By
the Mad Welshman or the Welsh Piper. The Welsh Piper. Yeah, that's it.
Was that intended for 2E?
No, it's for the RC, actually.
Oh, is it?
It's
okay.
For basic, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
that was a Dragon
experience
article,
points
right?
Kind of all... They're pretty much constant throughout all different versions of, like, classic D&D anyways, so you can use it for anything. Just kind of design them around the RC rules and then just take out what you don't want, like fighter combat options. Like, I'm not going to use that.
Oh, someone made an Excel sheet out of that, then.
Hmm. Yeah, but that. It's there is, I think, an Excel sheet that lets you calculate the experience points progressions,
mm-hmm.
but it kind of takes all the different aspects of classes and divides them up and assigns an experience point total depending on how good a class is at that aspect. And it's really good. I wish
mix and match.
That was that was a Dragon article, wasn't it?
No. Yeah. This is written in 2003.
Oh, okay. Because I remember something like that.
There was a Dragon. Yeah, there was a Dragon magazine article based on that. I don't know how similar it was, but it was the same paradigm.
Yeah, I got that in my book here.
Like full magic user casting is like 1,500 experience points, but cleric casting is only 500. But when they add up all the numbers, everything except for magic users needing that much to cast, it all lines up. It's really interesting. It's by a person named Aaron D. Smale. And Aaron is spelled in the female way, E-R-I.
Oh, yeah. Which we had a debate on way back when, and it turns out Aaron really is a guy.
Okay. Is this the same
I was
Aaron?
Wrong. Yes, Aaron Smale from the OD&D Guild.
Yeah.
The Chimera RPG. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I've had this document since before I was on the podcast. So,
Aaron,
I don't
if you're
remember
pink,
where I got it.
Correct us.
Hmm?
What?
Sorry, go ahead. I was just saying, Aaron, if you're listening and we're wrong, correct us. But anyway,
please.
Sorry, go ahead.
But, check it out. It's really good. I use it to make classes, and you can really mix and match, like, you can have a fighter magic user like almost like an elf, but give them thief abilities and stuff like that. So it's very cool.
Right. Very nice.
Word.
Word.
Word up.
All right. And things players should know that are different. The difference from the standard CD&D.
Everybody's purple.
What do you mean by that, Mike, when you wrote that note?
Well, a lot of campaigns tend to have specialty rules, like, oh, I don't know, no dwarves, no elves, no, you know.
No magic.
Oh, yeah, like the dwarves of this world are actually 9 feet tall, you know, or something like that.
Like Talislanthia, no elves ever. 30 years, still no elves.
Like, yeah. For instance, in my campaign world, elves are basically
mutants.
Very unwelcome anywhere outside of elfdom.
Hmm.
You know, that's not a direct game thing, but, you know, in dealing with NPCs and stuff, humans especially and elves don't get along in my world, so there's a lot of snarling back and forth. It's like, you want to play an elf? Okay, but keep in mind, you're going to be a second-class citizen when you enter any human village and town, so.
Wow. So they're basically the half-orcs of your world.
Well, actually, no, that would
be half-elves.
That'd be half-elves, but anyway. But one of these elves believe that they're superior, more intelligent, more attractive, more powerful than any other race.
Oh, they're jackals.
Right.
Okay.
But they haven't learned yet that other races don't like them constantly bringing it up. So, they get kind of wedgied whenever they go into human towns. Or the
oh, God, here comes the wedgie squad.
Yeah.
Elven wedgie squad for the
town. Or like in City State of the Invincible Overlord, fear. The group that attacks fighters for wearing plate if they're not high enough level.
Yeah, that was great.
Okay.
All right. For me, there's a bunch of backstory stuff with my campaign world, but elves they're not unwelcome, but people are wary of them just because they're, as a race, douchey. But it's not like the, oh, look at
that's
me,
familiar.
Cool I am douchey. It's like, oh, you're a human. Well, that's cool. I'll still be here when you die. And they're also very distrustful.
You're human. I'm very sorry.
I'm so sorry that you're human. Yeah. Elves and dwarves are basically like, they were the nuclear arms race for like the first era of the world. Like, there are no giants. There are some giants, but they're almost extinct because they were the first race and they kind of... They didn't treat the Earth very well, so the forest created elves to be weapons to fight the giants. And the giants were getting their butts kicked because, like, here are these elves with magic spells and swordplay and bows, and they're less fey and more Viet Cong. That makes any sense?
Yeah.
So, giants went and they made their own version of elves, which are dwarves. And dwarves are actually really... My campaign dwarves are really interesting because they have all the standard dwarf tropes, but there's like little kind of subtle tongue-in-cheek reasonings. Like the reason they're so thick and sturdy is so they could withstand more punishment. They just went through different like versions. Like here's dwarf version 1.37. Alpha. And, so, like, there's stuff like that. Dwarves are essentially, they're living machines. So they can live for, like, 500 years. But the way they make... They're all gender neutral. They identify as male, but they don't have any naughty bits. So the way they make new dwarves is on an assembly line.
Are the giants still making these dwarves, or
no? The dwarves actually, after a long time of their race actually dying out because they couldn't make new dwarves, there were expeditions funded to go into ruins of the giant kingdoms, to find two magical artifacts. One is the Codex Automata, which is like, this is how you make dwarves. And then there's a
Dwarves for Dummies.
Yeah, there's a mystical artifact in each clan's kingdom that is basically, it's a forge that makes souls. And that's what gives dwarves lives. It's what makes them not just a mannequin anymore.
Which is a great reason why elves and dwarves don't care for each other.
And that's in there as well. Elves still hate dwarves. Dwarves are like... They're really trying to kind of make a good impression, because what turned the tide in the war was that the dwarves gained sentience. They were no longer just like shock troops. They... Right. were imbued with life, and they turned against the giants. So the elves are very mistrustful, and the dwarves are just like, come on, bro, like, still mad about this?
Yeah. And, you know, the elves are probably, even if they got over that, they'd be looking down, I'm like, oh, well, you were created, you can't even be, you're not real, you were created.
It's not just that, it's just that they...
They look at them like robots, you know, or droids.
Kind of. Well, like, it's not just that, it's just the elves are, they're living weapons as well, but they don't die.
Ah.
And thus, a lot of them can still remember when...
A lot of them still remember, like, when dwarves were just actually tinier versions of giants. Like, the giants made them in their own image. That's actually why dwarves have beards. There's no functional purpose. It's just an ornamentation, because the giants had beards.
Hmm. Okay.
Makes sense.
Wow.
All these little, like... Dwarves have beards. They're strong and sturdy and resistant to magic.
And so if somebody's playing a dwarf in your campaign, they would have to work as kind of a... Not exactly emotionless, but...
No, they have emotions. They're fully sentient, but, like, when dwarves started out, they were just basically... They were battle droids.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of kind of guilt with me going that, and... They're also very long-lived, so, like, they're only on, like, the 10th generation of dwarves.
That's a good point. Can you resurrect them? Like Liz just said.
Yes, they have souls. You can... They're single nature, or dual nature, or whatever it is. Where they have souls and physical bodies. They can be resurrected. Elves have to be reincarnated.
Would whatever god the dwarves worship... see any difference between their quote-unquote manufactured souls and the souls of other creatures?
No, because the souls that they, like, the artifact that they have that imbues new dwarves with souls is a gift from the gods. Like, there's only so many that exist, and they're really well guarded and hidden down in the deep, deep parts of, like, clan homes.
So it's they're less manufactured souls than kind of a soul bank.
Yeah. It's like it's a big Sumerian, like, I don't know if you guys know anything about Sumerian art. It's just a giant altar built into a wall it's like 15, 20 feet tall, that is just a gaping mouth swirling with energy, and like it's basically a direct link into where souls come from. Like the essence of life.
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason why they have these things is why they're sentient is because the gods took pity on the dwarves. They're like, oh, look at these pitiful creatures. They're sent to war and die by the thousands and hundreds of thousands, and they have no say in it, so they gave them gave them souls and made them sentient and good by nature.
Clicking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, hold on a second.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto!
You will come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random Encounters.
Random Encounters. Let's talk a little bit about monsters this week and creating. I said monsters, not vomiting. And talking about creating custom monsters, maybe for your world, and what worked out for you, what didn't work out for you, what Pokemon character didn't work out for you.
Yes,
I just can't get Raichu to be the monster I want him to be.
So, obviously you've heard me many times say I use Pokemon and things like that, and people laugh at me, and blah, blah, blah. Let's start with somebody else. Mike, making up your monsters, what's worked for you, what hasn't worked for you?
I'd say the best one that I made up to use is probably bronze skeletons.
Bronze skeletons? Wow.
Yeah, which is basically just taking a skeleton and bronzing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, which,
yeah, which reduces its speed by half, but gives it an AC of 2.
Wow.
It's still only one hit die, but, you know, it's been useful to stick in. You know, I'll let magic users use them as servants with a bit more beef to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my most successful monster, I think. Least successful. Go to somebody else. Well, let me chew on that while I think of the least successful one.
Liz?
I have never created a monster for any of my campaigns.
Never?
Ever?
Never. I don't... It just doesn't seem like something I'd be good at doing, so... And there's so many monster books available that I've never had to, so... No, I've never made up my own monster. Sorry.
All right, Crispy, then.
I've got the Pumpkin Patch Goblins, which I've talked about on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's... The Goblins have Goblin Kings, which are all... They're just all David Bowie. That's actually... I'm not even kidding.
Thing
That's actually a thing in my campaign world.
Does he make the goblins?
No, he doesn't. He just...
Good. I just I had this image of him in a pumpkin patch. Never mind. Never mind.
And then for giants, like I have trolls, which I always associate with giants. But then there are trolls, and then there are true trolls, which are like... I'm going to bring up David the Gnome again. It's a cartoon from when I was a kid about a gnome in the forest. And the trolls from that have always stuck with... how I think of trolls. They're basically like big dumb giants, and they live under bridges and have magical powers and stuff like that.
So I think opposed... that, I think...
What, Glenn, you think what?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, as opposed to like the mossy green fur trolls, those are like the offspring of the true trolls.
See, what you described to me, I think of as like ogres.
Yeah, actually, they'd be pretty similar.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Ogres with a bit more magic.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it's the best way to put it, actually.
Vince, have you invented any...
Oh, I've invented more monsters than you can blink an eye at.
I've fought a few.
Not just pumpkin-headed...
I had the Zap Foxes. His
Gordians. I was just thinking of the Zap Fox.
Zap Fox?
The one that pissed Fox Crispy off completely.
And... F that fox. F him in the A.
I see. Okay.
You're just mad that he zapped you, that's all.
Okay. Nothing like Charlie Fate, but okay.
F that guy, too.
I hate Charlie Fate. Okay. So you're just a plethora of monsters.
Yeah, I'll just take a monster and just, you know, mash it up and make something else out of it. Doesn't have to be Pokemon.
Oh. Oh, okay, cool.
There's so many different things you could add things to it, make it more faster, stronger, you know, make it more AC, give it better weapons, you know. People always forget, give a monster a weapon.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Why can't the that kobold be wearing that ring of invisibility? Why can't he be wearing a ring plus one? Why can't he have a sword plus one?
Or a sword
like we did in that episode. Few episodes back, talking about all the monsters with magic weapons and armor, but they never seem to actually use them.
What about a kobold? What about a camouflage kobold? One that is naturally able to, like a chameleon, blend into the things around him as long as he stays still long enough?
What about a gelatinous cube that accidentally swallowed a girdle of giant strength?
You have to wear the girdle of giant strength.
Well,
the
goblin
he is.
Yeah, well,
the gelatinous cube charges into the room.
Oh, a haste!
It's coming right for me at blinding speeds of 10.
Ah,
And that scene from Austin Powers.
Yeah.
That's what I know.
Yes, Wes, you welcome to the Tangent Podcast, where we go everywhere else but where we're supposed to.
Hi.
I'm your host.
I never created a monster. I have to talk about something.
Oh.
I think okay. Vince is on the right track, though. Like, it's really easy to just add a few things to a monster, and for experience points, you just give it a couple more asterisks.
Well, there's just...
Have you done that and had the monster turn out not to work very well?
No, my monsters work perfectly.
Okay.
otherwise, they don't get
Florio, the maestro of monster making.
Otherwise, they don't get your union card. So you know. No, it's very simple. Just look at the book, make things, add to it, change it. Go by the chart that's in the book for. It spells it out. You even in the 1E book, if you go to the 1E book, it shows you like monsters with special abilities. This hit dice would be this hit dice.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. That's how you get the experience off of it. It's not that difficult.
You're true.
I can see maybe someone coming from 3rd edition, 4th, whatever, the later editions, having a little bit of problem doing that with the older edition.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that hard. Read. Reading is fundamental.
Figure it out. Yep. Yep-er.
I will say that's one thing I like about the suite of stuff that you get with D&D Insider. So it's just a monster builder that does it all for you.
Yeah, that's being cheap.
Yeah, but it's also, there's a lot more to account for with those monsters. They have more stats, which I'm not saying is better or worse.
Yeah, the 4E monster builder, let's just take a bunch of crap, throw it together, and say, I made a new monster.
Yeah, like, that's valid.
No, it's your
I want a skeleton with tentacles for arms.
But you're not doing any of the work. You're making a program do the work for you. There's no originality in that.
Well,
you have to base it off the idea. Like,
no, it's
still
crap.
Have to come up with the concept.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Oh.
Yeah.
Those pumpkin-headed satyrs were really hard, weren't they?
They were really...
to make.
Yeah, but I sat down with originality and I wrote down everything about them.
I was going to say, I think there's a difference between coming up with an entirely new monster concept and just a troll with 3 arms instead of 2. You know?
Yeah, instead of just jamming a bunch of things with some monster together as opposed to coming up with a new monster.
Right.
But you can do both of those in either system.
Oh, you could do that. Yeah, sure. In any classic or so-and-so, I was...
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're right.
I don't know. Program's cheating.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to totally poo-poo it, but I'm going to totally poo-poo it because it's 4th edition. But as far as, like, I mean, I've used stuff online for other things, like making dungeons and stuff. I don't know. Why not? At least it gives you... I could look at that and go, okay, that's a springboard for my imagination.
Mm.
Okay, this is what it gave me. What can I do with this, and how can I change it and add stuff and all this other stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of like character generators. I mean, you use character generator, it comes up with a name and a persona. Most of the time, I'll look at it and go, well, no, I don't exactly want to use it as is, but it has given me an idea to tweak it this way instead.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know the best part of when I went to Gen Con last year, that I wrote every character by hand for my games, for my players, and that was probably the best thing that every one of the players that came to the game liked, was the fact that I wrote it out by hand and didn't use a generator for it. That they want to keep it.
See, I always find generators to be really lackluster. I'm just like, oh, cool, that's a neat name, but all of this other stuff is just crap. I'm just going to throw that out.
You can get some funny things off of a random character generator. Yeah. I remember this one program that Mike's got, and I forget the name of it, but we created an elf character, and it automatically gave it a secondary skill of woodcutter.
That was the DM's assistant program for 1E.
I remember they did
back in the 80s. Yeah.
Like, well, I think I see why this elf is adventuring and not living in the woods anymore.
Yeah.
That's right. The DM was... I remember that program.
And as Longlareth Kellathorn looked upon the breadth of his forest, he wept. For there was no more wood to cut.
Father, look, I made a chest of drawers. That was our house.
Anyway, Glenn, what about you?
Well, me? I've had my success and a failure around. The failure was early on in 1E, I invented a monster called the Periscopium, which is exactly what you think it is. It's this little periscope with one eye, with arms and legs, and a little mouth. And basically, I make them as the thieves and roaches of my world, to the point where everybody wanted to kill me if I ever so much as even mentioned, you know, even said I was going to bring these things out.
So how did they work? Tell us a little bit how they work.
They were basically third to fifth level thieves.
They were shaped like what? Like
they were shaped like a black periscope.
Uh-huh.
And you know, when you look, you know, where the periscope comes out, that's the eye. Okay. Right underneath is a mouth, and they got these little spindly arms and legs.
I was picturing something like you know, like a really thin E.T. running around or something like that.
Yeah, kind of like that. And they'd steal anything that wasn't nailed down, especially if it was shiny.
Sure, it's not a Kinder now?
Yeah, it was like a proto-Kinder, I guess. And nobody liked it. Now, I've got what I'm working on right now that I think is going to be a success. It's called Grumblefish.
Grumblefish.
Grumblefish. And they live in this pond. It's basically a mad experiment by some mad wizard who crossed like largemouth bass with fighting koi. And so they're semi-sentient, and they walk. They will walk out of the lake, and they will beat up anything that comes in their path. They've got, like, fists of stone. They will beat anything up, and they will grumble about it while they're doing it. Their other name for grumblefish is Tourette's fish. Because they'll just kind of, all of a sudden, you go through the forest, you hear this, no, it's just grumblefish.
Razzle, frazzle, frazzle.
Yeah, you don't want to be around when they're mating because it sounds like a domestic argument. And I have high hopes for these characters. Because they've got like I'm going to have them like having some really powerful like fist attacks. They'll just come over and like dogpile on people. You know, that kind of thing. Anyway.
Friggin'
dirty sons, right on that kind of thing. Anyway, that's my contribution so far. Every once in a while, I come up with something. So.
So you say.
Yeah, so I say.
Very good, Glenn. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like the little creature you had there.
The Periscopium?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, thank you. I have high hopes for the other ones. So.
Anyways, I think we heard from everybody, right? We got Liz. Liz said no. So Liz is taken care of. we don't forget our Liz. Let's head into our last segment of the night.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier when we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons and Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Products of, I guess, your imagination. Not mine. Yours.
Somewhere. I don't know.
Somebody's imagination. Yeah.
Best published campaign for your classic D&D needs.
Okay.
If you had to use a published campaign, which would it be?
Hollow World.
Get out of here. Go.
Oh, I would love to use
now.
Hollow World. How could you not like Hollow World?
I've never read Hollow World, so why would you choose Hollow World?
It's like Land of the Lost / Wacky World / everything that Glenn hates.
It's basically, it's the earth inside the earth where all of the dead things and extinct creatures live.
Oh, so it's like Land That Time Forgot, sort of.
Yeah, so think of Land of the Lost, and that's pretty much what the Hollow World is.
Yeah, like Land of the Lost, Journey to the Center of the Earth kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's what I meant, Journey to the Center of the Earth. And
there's a whole
you get a chance to use all those D&D stats for dinosaurs that it's never get used.
According to Mistara, there was a whole land in Mistara that the immortals banished to the Hollow World.
Hmm.
I don't know why, they just banished it.
Yeah, because Hollow World is on the inside of Mystara.
That's right.
Right, it has its own certain races and classes, and if you're not part of Hollow World, certain things happen, and if you are part of the races of Hollow World, and you reject Society of Hollow World and follow the new adventurers that come down, you like lose abilities, and it's really
cool. Like Red Steel.
Red Steel?
It's a second edition campaign. Basically, like, you...
Savage Coast.
Yeah, I... It's...
Same with the CD.
Trying to remember, like, exactly how to explain it. There's, like, a medal, and it's killing everyone, but if you have it, you're okay, or something like that.
Yeah, something like
that. Red Steel?
Yeah, you have to have it... Once you're exposed to it for a certain amount of time, you have to carry, like, at least a shard on it with you. Otherwise, you start dying anywhere you go. Or you have to stay in that area.
Isn't it part of Dark Sun?
No. No, it's part of the Savage Coast.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, what would you use, Crispy? If you had
to Glenn, you wanna answer for me? I think you know what I would use.
Mystara. No. Birthright.
Yes.
Birthright. That's not really classic too.
Yeah, but it's so good.
Find a way.
I would find a way.
Well, I already asked you to find a way, and you have not proceeded to do that.
Just use it as is, and then all the stuff that doesn't fit, just cut it off.
But they're completely separate games.
Yeah.
No, you can't use second edition.
How would you possibly convert that? Next you're going to say you can use 1E and 2E things with each other.
No, that's heresy.
That's blasphemy.
That's crazy talk, yeah.
You're a friggin' madman. Michael.
I am. It's true.
Well, it's part of being a teacher, I guess.
Semester.
No, I'm here solely for the big bucks that you get teaching. For the huge, huge amounts of money they pay teachers. That's all I'm here for, man.
Yes. Our lavish lifestyle is something that many people envy.
Indeed.
So sanity has nothing to do with it. Okay.
It's indeed. A detriment, really.
What about you, Mike? If you had to pick one, which one would it be?
Carcosa. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I've never heard of Carcosa.
I like Carcosa, but that's one of those places I think your characters fall through the planes into and then spend a certain amount of adventures trying to get out of. I don't think I'd want to run a Carcosa campaign from scratch, but...
Well, I know there's some bloggers out there and some gamers out there. They're going to be running something on Google Plus called the Carcosan Wacky Races.
Yeah, we were talking about that last time.
Yeah. They're building cars and driving from one end of Carcosa to the other and see how much trouble or mutations they can get into.
Actually, I want to change my answer then, since we're not doing just classic settings. I would change mine to Ravenloft.
Ravenloft?
Oh, yeah.
Vince loves
that's right. I forgot you're a White Wolf guy. Okay. Yeah, Ravenloft, that's right up your alley, Vince.
Ravenloft was the only, like, second edition thing I ever bothered getting into.
Anyway, the campaign I would use would be Greyhawk, Folio. The Folio.
I wish I had that Folio.
I have it.
Me too.
Shut up.
Shut up. Why, Mike? Why the Folio and not the box set?
Because I like campaign worlds that are just given a very general background, but not a whole lot, because as a DM, I feel a lot more empowered to make the game my own.
But as Glenn has repeatedly said, just ignore everything you don't want to use.
Well, yeah. I know that is possible, but if I'm just using the Folio, that's a good shorthand to tell my players. If it's not in the Folio, I don't pay attention to it. So don't pull out, you know, Greyhawk Wars or Greyhawk novel number 47. I don't want to hear it. If it's not in the Folio, I make it up, and that's that.
I hate people that do that stuff. I just tell them I don't care.
This is the way it goes.
Like my last DM... probably one of the best DMs. If it was one of the ones, like you said, he pulled it out, and what was in this book? He said, let me see that book. He took the book, looked at it, and threw it across the room. He said, now it's not in the book.
You know, if you're going to say, I don't care and stuff, you know what the best people to do that to is Forgotten Realms players.
Oh, God, yes.
Because it's like they will like hold you, they will hold you to the line.
No, yeah. He wasn't one of the chosen of Mistra. You're a liar.
Yeah.
Nice voice there, by the way, because that was great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and you just go, this is not the way it works here.
Yeah.
In Legends and Lore, page 47, it clearly states.
States! Exactly.
That's almost like Skeletor Nerd.
No, you gotta do it. You gotta do it in the voice from the Family Guy, the one that likes Meg, the AV kid voice.
Oh, hey Meg, what's going on?
Yeah, that kid's voice. If you do it in his voice, it sounds better.
Yeah,
but and you didn't say. Works. You didn't actually say you cast it. So now there's Ogres, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Worst supplement ever.
But yeah, I mean that's why when in Expert, when the Known World first came out and it was just the Expert stuff, I like that. But when they made it Mystara, nah. Too much detail, too much crap.
Yeah, no, I don't really want to go and read.
Don't.
I mean, I know there are people who like Mystara, and that's great if it works for you, but I don't like...
I happen to like Mystara, but I'm not taking any offense to what you're saying. If you don't want to read it, don't read it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Don't be dissing gazetteers, though. Except no, so far. It's okay to
That's fine. I don't
like, I'm not dissing the gazetteers. I just don't want to read them.
Okay.
Exactly. And more importantly, I don't want to be bound even just implicitly. Yes, I know I can say I ignore it, but I find it easier just to say, if it's not here, I don't use it, rather than, I didn't use that gazetteer or that gazetteer, but I used something out of this gazetteer, but back there in that gazetteer I don't use, and in the novel, you know, it's just...
Yeah, it's
no.
spread out, like, and it's
well,
easier...
Well, since they're spread out in several gazetteers, it's easier to say you don't use it, or you ignore it.
The point is, you just want to have to go through the whole process of saying, I don't use that.
Yeah, right. And, like, my point is I don't want to read several gazetteers.
Okay.
Yep, me too.
Got it. Got it.
His?
About me.
Published world you'd love to play in.
If you had to use published world.
Anyone.
If I had to, it would be Greyhawk.
Mm-hmm.
And as far
Folio?
As modifications, I would throw in the city-state of the Invincible Overlord into the Greyhawk world.
Girl,
I totally forgot about CSIO. That would be actually
high. How could you forget about city-state?
How indeed. I've always wanted to run the Wilderlands,
I don't
but
know,
I never
Liz,
have.
That's two strikes against Mike today.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, you're gonna.
I'm sorry. Did Glenn just say, girl? I'm pretty sure I just heard Glenn go, girl.
I said, girl, you're a girl after my own heart.
Oh. Okay.
But I can do that too, girl.
Yeah.
That's not really bad.
CSIO.
I don't know, Mike. You're working on two strikes here. First the D10 initiative, and now this.
Why's the D10 initiative?
Hey, remember that was when I said, husband, I have no husband.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hey, Gary used D10 initiative. That's good enough
for me.
You
hear what Gary said, you know, right? People do that one.
Gary Gygax used D10 initiative. It's good enough.
I love that. You're like, well, Gary used. I don't care what Gary did.
Oh, boy.
Well, this has been a fun show.
Well, me, I would... I've got them walking around Thunder Rift and Mystara. I might do that, too, but I'm partial...
We have a cat bite in the middle of the show.
Yeah, something.
Well, I was sitting at the computer, and I had my hand on my leg, and Messi decides to jump up into my lap, and her back foot, the claws just dug into the fingers of my hand that was resting on my leg, and she's like, ow.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to leave now. I've got blood.
All right. Well,
hopefully I'll be back before everyone says goodbye, but if I'm not, I'll go ahead and say goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
It's like Leaf when you do the actual play podcast. That cat, get off the damn cat.
Glenn, goodbye, Liz.
Glenn, finish your thought.
Oh, I had a thought. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I kind of like Thunder Rift and Mystara, what they're doing right now, but I also have urge to do a Wilderlands campaign. But I'm thinking instead of starting them in the CSI Wilderlands, I mean CSIO.
Law and Order, CSIO, clang, clang.
Yeah. CSI with David Caruso. But starting them in, like, across the sea in Tarantus and have them work their way across to the city-state. That's
that'd be different.
Yeah, it'd be different. I mean, I've got stats for both of them, so, you know, let them go wild. I wish I had a little maps. But, yeah, Wilderlands.
Okay.
Yay. How about you, Vince?
I thought I already answered that.
I know that one.
Yeah, Ravenloft.
Yeah, Ravenloft.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
No, I actually like Ravenloft. I liked Ravenloft not because of Strahd, actually Lord Soth.
Oh, well, why don't you play Dragonlance then?
I did play Dragonlance.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't vote for Dragonlance. Tracy Hickman.
Ah.
He's our bro.
Yeah, I mean, Tracy Hickman's like my man, my boy, man.
In spite of riding railroads.
Every chance I get to talk to him, I'm like, Dragonlance this. No, I love Dragonlance. Cool. We played it so much that I got sick of it after a while. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
I think that's actually going to bring a close to this show now.
Okay, let's walk down that road. Bye.
Okay, Glenn decided the show's over now. So,
hang up then.
Walking down that lonely road, right?
Yeah, walking down the lonely road, and Liz is in the emergency room.
Liz is
room.
Hunting for Band-Aids.
Yes, hunting for Band-Aids.
Mike is crying over his marriage license, and...
I'm waving at Vince, who's flying away like a vampire, going to Ravenloft.
Finally,
all we hear is bleh, bleh.
And Crispy, who is somewhat in the S&W world, going, "What am I doing? I don't know."
S&M.
No, S&W.
S&W.
Oh, okay.
S and swords and wizardry.
Oh, I thought it was swords and monsters.
Anyway.
Good night,
everybody.
Yeah, good night.
Good night, everybody.